This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Hey folks, welcome to episode 165 of the TriDot Podcast. 165 episodes into our podcast journey as a company, and we have never really taken an entire show to talk about the TriDot platform itself. So we are going to be a tad teeny weeny bit selfish today and teach athletes how TriDot designs training, why that training is laid out the way it is, and how to best execute certain swim, bike, and run sessions. We work really hard to make sure the podcast is valuable to all triathletes, whether you train with TriDot or not. So thanks in advance for doing us a solid and letting us take this episode to help guide the athletes that are using our platform. If you are not using the TriDot platform to train, right now is the best time to give it a try. We have our annual research project called the Preseason Project underway. You can apply to be a participant in that. You get 2 free months of TriDot training, and we get more data that helps our software engineers keep TriDot on the cutting edge of triathlon training. It's a win-win all around, if you ask me. So head to tridot.com/PSP to apply for that. Our first coach joining us for this conversation is Joanna Namy. Joanna is better known as Coach JoJo and has been coaching athletes with TriDot since 2012. She is a co-founder of Hissy Fit Racing, a fourth-year member of the Betty Design Elite Squad, and now has 18 going on 19 Ironman finishes on her accomplished triathlon resume. Coach Jo has raced 3 Ironman World Championships and serves as TriDot's coaching community manager. Coach Jo, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Andrew. Super pumped to be here with you and John. Go team!
Go team! Also joining us is Coach John Mayfield. John is a USAT Level 2 and Ironman U certified coach who leads TriDot's Athlete Services, Ambassador, and Coaching Programs. He has coached hundreds of athletes, ranging from first-timers to Kona qualifiers and professional triathletes. John has been using TriDot since 2010 and coaching with TriDot since 2012. And John, I have to add a huge congratulations. You hit a new Ironman PR in your 10th Ironman finish in Panama City Beach just a few weekends ago. 10:56, you slid under 11 hours, and it's a new PR for you. I literally, John, was screaming and fist pumping at the Ironman tracker app all day long as your splits were coming through. And every time I did, my wife, Morgan, was just like, how's John doing? Where's John at? She knew what I was looking at. So congrats to you, my friend.
Thanks. Yeah, that means a lot. And even more so that Morgan cared enough to ask. So that puts a smile on my face. And it was my 10th Ironman, not my 10th in Panama City Beach. It was my 4th, though. Four times there at Ironman Florida. It's my favorite race. So it was nice to get that monkey off my back. I've been trying for last couple of years to go under 11 hours and barely did it, but got it done.
Well, I'm Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our main set conversation, and then wind things down with our cool down. On the cool down today, Vanessa will be interviewing 2 athletes who have been through TriDot Pool School to hear about their experience. Pool schools are popping up all around the country, so head to tridotpoolschool.com to learn more and sign up. Before we get too deep into the show today, I want to give a shout out to our good friends at UCAN. Here at TriDot, we are huge believers in using UCAN to fuel our training and racing. In the crowded field of nutrition companies, what separates UCAN from the pack is the science behind Live Steady, the key ingredient in UCAN products. While most energy powders are filled with sugar or stimulants that cause a spike and crash, UCAN energy powders powered by Live Steady deliver a steady release of complex carbs to give you stable blood sugar and provide long-lasting energy. I personally fuel many of my workouts with the orange-flavored Edge Gel and the unflavored UCAN Energy. Between their energy mix, energy bars, almond butter, and more, there is definitely a Live Steady product that you will love. So head to their website, UCAN.co, and use the code TRIDOT to save 20% on your entire order. That's UCAN.co, promo code TRIDOT.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
Most triathletes have a multi-sport wash of some kind on their wrist, tracking their every move. Having it track our workouts is the big plus, obviously, but a fun secondary thing that these watches can do is count our steps. For the most part, this is a default setting that we all leave on, or even though we get more than enough steps on most days as triathletes. But I'm curious to hear, John and Joe, as a warm-up question today, what is the most steps you have logged in one day, and what is the story behind those steps? John, how about you?
So my record is just shy of 58,000 steps. So as you mentioned, I just had my Ironman PR over the past weekend. This, my 58,000 steps comes from my PR the other way on my longest Ironman. That was a couple of years ago at Ironman, Texas. So one, it's kind of a logistically challenging race to begin with. It's about a mile walk from the transition area down to the swim start. So before the race even starts, you've already, you know, taken a few steps around the house and getting to transition. Then you walk a mile from the transition area down to the swim start and then, you know, running through transition, all that. But then, I ran the first of three loops around eight and a half miles, something like that. And then my stomach just exploded. It's like Mike Tyson punched me in the gut. And I went from feeling pretty good and being on pretty good pace to that first loop to just having like the worst stomach flu I've ever had for the next couple hours. I ended up walking about 13 consecutive miles kind of in the middle of that race, and then rallied for like the last couple miles and actually felt pretty good to run it into the finish. But it was an Ironman that would have had a lot of steps in that day already, then just exacerbated by the fact that I walked for 13 miles in the middle of that marathon. So set a record for most steps in a day, my longest Ironman. Learned a lot of lessons out there. It made me a better athlete, better coach, and I was kind of glad for that one to be over.
Yeah, you certainly have me beat in terms of total steps in a day. And it is wild to think about that Ironman day, because I'd imagine for a lot of long course triathletes, the most steps they've taken in a day might be at an Ironman. And you spend 5, 6, 7 hours of that day on a bike, not logging any steps whatsoever, but still being active. And yet somehow you still get enough steps in for that to be the most steps that you'll take in one single day. Coach Joe, what is this answer for you?
Well, I was pretty naive to Ironman still after a couple and decided during a family Disney World vacation that I was going to be super on it and get up and do a 16-mile run from some cheesy resort in Disney World to come back. And I was all motivated. We're going to hit Animal Kingdom, Magic Kingdom. We're going to hit two parks in one day. We're going to knock it out. Four kids in tow. And then about 2 hours into our Disney World experience for the day, I realized that 16-mile run was a big mistake. so long ago that I have no idea the mileage for that day. But, I mean, that has got to be the most steps I've ever taken. For any parent who's been to Disney World, you understand that you're usually walking about 14, 15 miles a day by the time you're through. And then the fun of standing in line for hours at a time was like just more mentally grueling. But I survived. It's the things we do for our kids. So that's got to be probably the most mileage I've done in a day.
All right. For me, this was actually right when I came on staff at TriDot. I was brand new to the team. We had been podcasting for maybe a month or so. And my first staff trip, I went with John Mayfield and Jeff Raines and Elizabeth James to Ironman, Arizona in the year 2019. So it was my first time out there. I had the TriDot camera with me and I was just walking all over that course, just trying to get pictures and video footage of our TriDot athletes who were racing. An Ironman Arizona course is very spectator friendly. The run in particular, there's a couple bridges that go over the reservoir where the swim is, and there's running on both sides. And so Jeff, Elizabeth, and I kept crossing the bridges and trying to catch John, trying to catch different athletes who are racing at different moments. And all in all, spectating Ironman that day, I took 42,000 steps in one day. That is more than any race I've done. Personally, and I've gotten better, John. And I think it's just because I've gotten smarter as a Ironman spectator. I've learned how to walk fewer steps and get the same quality footage and pictures. But that very, very first time as a staff member, as the staff media guy out at a race, I took 42,000 steps just trying to get to different spots on the course and get different pictures of different athletes. And I've refined my kind of workflow since then when I'm at a race. So I don't know if I'll ever top that ever again, but 42K is this answer for me. Guys, we're going to throw this question out to you. I know so many of you listening have your Garmin, your Polar, your Coros, whatever, your Apple Watch on your wrist at all times. I'm curious to hear, what is the most steps you have ever logged in one day? And what is the story behind those steps? Can't wait to hear what you have to say.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
Ketones are nature's superfuel, and the Delta-G ketone ester, created by Professor Kieran Clark at Oxford University, is the world's first drink that delivers the exact ketone produced naturally in the body. When I talk to tried-out athletes who are already using Delta-G drinks in their training and racing, they all rave about the spark of energy and mental clarity the ketones provide. Some athletes are taking Delta-G performance on the side of their carbohydrate source. Others are mixing Delta-G Tactical in with their nutrition. Both ways are highly effective, so however you approach nutrition, there is a Delta-G drink that can mix seamlessly into your flow. So head to the website, DeltaGKetones.com, to learn more about fueling with Delta-G Ketone Ester and to book your free 15-minute consultation. When you place an order, use code TRIDOT20 to get 20% off your Superfuel Ketone drinks. As sophisticated as the training design is, once you onboard to TriDot, executing your workouts is as simple as pulling up today's session and then going out and doing it. Even still, we've learned many of the helpful explanations and tips that can help make your experience training with TriDot as smooth and effective as possible. Here to help us get the most out of our TriDot training and answer some of the most frequently asked questions, our coaches John Mayfield and Joanna Namey. Now, John, we don't have to name names here, but there are some other training platforms that athletes can take a peek at versus TriDot. Just kind of to get us going today, what makes TriDot more sophisticated and effective than other training platforms and apps?
So it really comes down to what is behind the training that is prescribed and how that training is prescribed. So most of the training apps that have been around for years and years, decades, effectively are a blank calendar. If someone does not go in and populate that calendar with sessions, then sessions will never populate. So it is completely dependent upon a person to go in and create that training. So the athlete can go write their own training. They can hire a coach that can go in and day by day schedule sessions in there, or you can go in and buy a pre-written plan that will then populate to your calendar. Kind of same thing. Once you begin to execute that training plan, if someone doesn't go in and manually make changes, that training plan is never going to change. So it's completely static. Nothing is adjusting. Nothing is being updated by the training or the data that is related to the training. So that's the majority of the apps that are being used. Most triathletes that aren't using TriDot are using one of those. And then in the last couple of years, we've seen some others come along that are beginning to use AI and some technology to populate that calendar. So kind of same thing. It's a blank calendar. And then there is some software that is used to populate that training. But what separates TriDot from those other AI-based training apps, again, is what is determining the training and how that training is prescribed. So effectively, what these other AI apps have done is replicate the coach. So it's saying a coach goes in and creates this program that says, if I were coaching this athlete, this is what I would do. And based on the results from a given session, these are the changes that I would make. So effectively, it is still that individual coach or person who is prescribing the training. They're just taking advantage of AI to automate it. So the decision-making is still based on that one coach's philosophy, their experience, their education. So it's relatively limited. And really what separates TriDot again is what is the training based on? So there is no one person who is programming the training in with TriDot. It's not based on what one person or even a group of coaches think is going to be most beneficial for the athletes. It is actually based on data. So we've talked about it for almost every single podcast we ever talked about. TriDot leverages data from millions of training files, millions of training sessions from tens of thousands of athletes. The software then analyzes all of this incredible amount of data to then determine what is going to be the best course of action for any specific athlete. So because there is this tremendous amount of data from a tremendous amount of athletes, the software is now able to prescribe training specifically for them. It's able to get very granular on a per athlete basis. So this could be anything from a young elite female racing short course to an older male racing long course and everything in between. Every individual, every race distance, the data is able then to determine which is going to be the best course of action. And then as that training is executed, the data is coming in. That data that comes in now determines what happens next. Whatever adjustments or refinements are not based on what a person thinks it should be. It's actually what is the data telling us, and what can we do looking back at these millions of training files from tens of thousands of athletes? What does the software then determine is going to be the best course of action? So again, what really separates TriDot from every other training option is the fact that it is truly based on data, and it is the data that is coming in that is driving those adjustments and refinements. Whereas everything else is simply up to the individual athlete or a coach to go in and prescribe or adjust those sessions.
So there are a few different subscription levels that athletes can come on board at. I mean, that's part of the beauty here. I mean, there are offerings for athletes of all budgets. Now, this gets updated from time to time just based on new features rolling out and whatnot. So I don't want to get too specific on what each subscription level has. So just in general, what differentiates each different subscription level within TriDot?
So really what we wanted to do, and this is something we set out several years back, is to provide a solution for every triathlete. So what we found was that only about 15% of the triathlon market was able or willing to hire a coach and spend $200 plus per month on a training plan. So 85% of the market was left for training on their own, making up their own training, or just a template out of a magazine, something like that. So what we wanted to do is provide solutions for every athlete. So that's what we did in creating these lower level subscription options. So we have subscription options for every budget, for every athlete. So this is really where we get into that power of technology, because we're able to leverage the technology in creating the training plans. We can offer some of these subscriptions at these lower prices. The effectiveness and quality of the training is in no way diminished. In fact, you're still getting that superior training plan, but we're able to leverage technology and delivering it at the lower cost. So the options are largely convenience features as well as some customization. So there's they really range, and there's a complete listing. You can see which are available in which subscription option, but really there is a solution to get that high quality training for every athlete, regardless of their budget.
So what is the process for an athlete coming on board with TriDot? I mean, what are the steps from signing up for one of those subscriptions to doing your first workouts?
Yes, Andrew, athletes can go to TriDot.com and sign up for a 2-week free trial and quickly get their dashboard set up. They will provide personal information to onboard. We will then set them up with their dashboard, and they can immediately see their workouts. We ask them to sign up for an orientation call that'll walk them through the platform, and they can ask questions at that time and get a better understanding of everything that's available on their dashboard and what they need to know.
Yeah, Joe, I'm glad you mentioned the orientation call. The orientation call was something that I did not do when I first came on TriDot. I was like, I'm a millennial. It's an app. I'll figure it out. There were so many things I learned down the line that I would have known right away if I had done the orientation. The other really cool thing that we've implemented fairly recently is the month one mentor program. So athletes that come on board, you will get an email asking if you would like to have a mentor on TriDot. And so basically what that is a current athlete, a current TriDot ambassador who's using the app, knows the app pretty well, is a part of our online community. And if you opt in to having a month one mentor, that's basically just an athlete that you can bounce questions off of. If you run into something, if you just have a question about a certain session, anything that you have come up in your first month or two on TriDot, or I guess, but by name, it's the first month on TriDot. You can ask a question to your mentor. They will answer that question for you. So if you see, if you onboard, you sign up, you see that email inviting you to, hey, do you want a mentor? Hit accept if you would like to have another athlete just like you, who lives somewhere else in the world, they can answer a lot of your questions as well. So definitely do the orientation. If that sounds good, definitely sign up to have a mentor. John, anything else to add here about onboarding?
Yeah, it's a super simple process. It takes just a couple minutes. It's answering a couple questions. It walks you through. But I will say it is important to provide as accurate and timely current information as possible, because this again goes into creating your training. So it's not just asking these questions for to get a feel for who you are, like, or just kind of informational sake. This is truly what your training is going to be based on. So the more accurate the information we can provide early on, the better quality your training is going to be from the very beginning. And then from there, I would say two important steps to do as soon as possible is one, schedule your race so that you're now telling the software what you're preparing for. So now we can be very specific in the training that is prescribed. As Joe mentioned, you don't necessarily have to. If you don't know what your race is, that's fine. But if you have the race, if you're registered, sign up, or you know what your race is going to be, go ahead and add that to your calendar. Now every training session that you do will begin to prepare you for that specific race. And then connect your device. So whichever device that you're using, that is how TriDot is going to get the data from those training sessions. And there will that is how your training will then be refined at going forward. It's all based on that training data that you're providing. So get the race on the schedule and connect the device.
Many athletes use a variety of websites and devices to track their activities. And John, you just mentioned the importance of connecting your devices. There's hardware options like Garmin, there's Polar, there's Wahoo. There's software connections that you can make like Strava, Zwift, and Trainer Road. What devices and platforms will connect with and work with TriDot?
Like many you mentioned, Andrew, just about everything. Yay!
Yay!
Apple Watches, Garmin's, Polar's, Wahoo, Strava. You can download your workouts to Garmin, Zwift, Ruby, and do your workouts from those platforms. So it is pretty awesome.
Yeah. And I will say, if we took the time to dive into every certain scenario of what platforms a user might be using and help them navigate making those connections, that might be a whole podcast episode in and of itself. We won't do that right now. Once you come on board, any questions you have or troubleshooting you have based on the watch and software that you're using, feel free to reach out to our support team. They will help you make those connections properly. Or on the I'm TriDot Facebook group, you can ask athletes, hey, who's using a this watch? Who's using that watch? Who's using Ruby? And how do you, and athletes will be more than happy to answer those questions. Our software development team is always working behind the scenes to make those connection processes as smooth as possible and to add new devices as they're coming out on the market. So just know that. Now, some folks just want to log on and do their workout. Other folks like to know why they are getting the exact session they are getting. John, how does TriDot design training? What training phases will an athlete see throughout their season?
So there are two phases that the athletes are going to see. One is their race prep phase, and the other is the development phase. So kind of depending on how the athlete has their season planned out is going to determine which phase that they're in. So We have this long standing saying, we've got several podcast episodes on it, fast before far, strong before long. So effectively what we want to do is in those months leading into a race, we want to build our functional threshold in the swim, bike, and run as high as we can. We want to get as strong as possible, as fast as possible, as efficient as possible. So that's what we're going to focus on in those development phases. So in that time, we are less concerned with building stamina. We're going to do that a little bit later in the race phase. And that's going to be contingent upon the distance of the race. So if we need to go longer, like 70.3 or Ironman distance, clearly we need to develop stamina, but that is going to come later. So that's that fast before far, strong before long. So the development phase generally is earlier in the year. So like kind of now as we're heading into the winter months, not a whole lot of racing going on. Vast majority of athletes are heading into development phases. This is also something we largely center the preseason project around is demonstrating the effectiveness of this fast before far, strong before long training. We spend these preseason months, building that functional threshold in the swim, bike, and run, and then seeing the seeing that pay off in the race season with great results. So that race prep phase is going to continue to build the functional threshold and continue to build the strength of the athlete. But then it's also going to get more race specific. So for a short course race, sprint or Olympic distance, there's less need to build stamina. The stamina necessary to compete at the sprint or Olympic distance race is going to naturally be built at those lower volume sessions. You don't necessarily need long sessions to go out and complete a sprint or Olympic distance race. Whereas more so when racing 70.3 or Ironman, you need those long sessions, especially the long bike, the long run sessions. So that's going to be a difference that we're going to see. So there's going to be a increase in the training volume. You're going to have more long sessions, longer long sessions. Those are going to be appropriate for you specifically and the course that you're racing. So again, you as an athlete, the distance of the race and even the course itself is going to determine how long those long sessions are. So there's a bit of a focus shift. So in the development phase, it's about getting fast before far, strong before long, as much as possible. And then in that race prep phase, and this can last anywhere from, I would say, 8 to as far as 20 weeks out from a given race. That is where we get much more specific to the needs of that specific race.
So when an athlete comes on board with TriDot, there are a few settings that are available that we can tweak. And again, you can absolutely just onboard. You can let that first session pop up and you can go to the session without tweaking the settings whatsoever. The default settings there are great. But if you want to look at these settings and kind of tweak them for your schedule or for your preferences, Joe, what is available there for us to tweak in the settings? And of those settings, which ones do you recommend your athletes take a look at?
Yes, Andrew, we get this question a lot from coaches that are coming on board to coach with TriDot, as well as athletes that are using the platform. In your preferences, there is a number of areas you can tweak. You can select the days you prefer your long bike and long run, your long sessions. You can opt to only bike and run if you're not currently swimming, or just run or just bike. You can adjust volume, a number of sessions for each discipline. And with certain subscriptions and earned perks, you can add in strength training sessions, swim analysis, and other perks that are earned. It is important to make sure you have your long workout days selected, that your weight is always current, accurate, and that your personal information is correct. For each session, you want to make sure you've selected indoor or outdoor. I've had a number of athletes will come back to me and say, this was totally wrong. I don't know what, TriDot is doing here. And I'll be like, well, you selected indoor and you biked 14 miles outside.
Oh yeah, for sure. That TrainX score fires up. And I mean, you did the workout right. So you're expecting a good score, maybe somewhere in the 80s or 90s. And all of a sudden you get a lower score than you were expecting. And it's not because you did the workout wrong. And it's not that TriDot interpreted the data wrong. It's just that you didn't tell TriDot what environmental conditions you were doing that workout in. So I know that can happen to athletes when they first come on board. And once you remember to simply toggle that indoor-outdoor button and to update the time of day, you're bound to get the score that you're expecting.
It is important to have those selections correct when you execute a workout.
So as Joe mentioned, there's a whole lot of things that you can do to customize the training to really accommodate your schedule, your needs, that sort of thing. But I always say that the defaults are there for a reason. So it's this, what is defaulted is going to be the optimized training, the sequence of sessions, the frequency of sessions, the spacing of those long sessions, all of that is going to be optimized to produce your best results with the minimal risk of injury. So I would say certainly adjust those sessions or adjust those preferences as needed, but just know that the default preferences are there for a reason. There's a lot of thought given to why those defaults are what they are. But so I would say just be careful in making those adjustments, make them as needed. But just know that the defaults are there for a reason.
Yeah, John, I'll give one tangible example of what you're talking about. The default long sessions, for example, the default long run will be on Wednesday and the default long bike will then be on Saturday. And there's a lot of reasons for that. It spreads out your longest sessions, your most important sessions. But a lot of folks just schedule wise, they get on and they're like, hey, I can't do a long run on Wednesday. I need to do both of my long workouts on the weekend. So that's a common sentiment. And so in your preferences, you can set to have your long bike on Saturday and your long run on Sunday. Now, your long run on Sunday will be done with the fatigue from the long bike on Saturday. So you're giving up just a smidge, right, of the potential gains to be made by putting them back to back. But if that's what your schedule allows, that's what your schedule allows. And so any of the customizing that you do, your TriDot's still going to optimize your schedule based on what you can actually do. And the training is still going to be very, 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 very effective. Or you can leave the default and just from time to time, as your schedule flares up, you can manually just move a session around as needed. Now, many of the questions I see from new users to the I Am TriDot Facebook group revolve around how to execute their sessions. How do we know what paces to hit and which metrics, just between power, heart rate, pace, et cetera, to kind of pay attention to for each workout?
Yes, Andrew, most TriDot athletes, when they come on, execute initial assessments, an assessment for the bike, the run, the swim. And then they often repeat these assessments every 4 weeks, pretty much every 4 weeks, depending on when their races fall. These tests establish their threshold pace or power in each discipline. And from this data, the algorithm sets an athlete's zones. For swimming, this is swim pace per 100 meters or yards. For run, this pace is per mile. That's for our workouts with intensity or intervals. For run on easier runs, that metric is heart rate. And for the bike, it's power watts for interval workouts or heart rate for easy rides. So an athlete can set their power, pace, or heart rate as their primary metric in their settings. But it's important for an athlete to check the session beforehand to make sure they know which is their primary execution metric. So when we are looking, we go to do an easy ride or an easy run, that's all of our minutes are falling in on zone two. We can see that the little heart is highlighted, and that is the metric. That's the ones we like. We can read a magazine, watch a show, answer emails. that's the nice, easy workouts. So we will be looking at our heart rate zones for those workouts versus workouts where we are pushing intervals, which may be power. I do add that a lot of athletes don't train with power. And so you can set the metric in your settings to be looking at heart rate during all of your bike sessions.
So we've seen that over the last several years where most athletes do have pace now for the run, and more are adding power to the bike. So we can use heart rate to measure intensity of sessions, but there are some limitations when using heart rate, especially for these higher intensity sessions. Heart rate is a delayed response. So it's kind of a catch-22. The more fit you are, the longer it's going to take for your heart rate to match your intensity level. So if you have a relatively short burst of intensity, your heart rate's never going to get there. So you can't utilize heart rate to measure your intensity. So that's why we use these more real-time objective metrics like pace and power, especially in those higher intensity sessions. Now, when we are doing a session, as Joe mentioned, all at zone two, the intent of that session is different. We're either trying to provide recovery or we're focusing on things like aerobic efficiency. So there are certain things that are only achieved at very low intensities. And what is required there is that the body is actually not working harder than we want it to. So that is why we have to maintain that lower heart rate. So even if you're holding a lower power or lower pace, if the heart rate exceeds that threshold crossover, we're no longer achieving the session as desired. So that is why on those zone two sessions, we follow heart rate exclusively. It doesn't matter what your power is. It doesn't matter what your pace is. We are exclusively looking to maintain that zone two heart rate. Again, as Joe mentioned, every session has a little icon to tell you exactly which metric to follow. And then, those updated paces will be there. Just as a reminder, your paces and power will adjust based on the environment. So, we mentioned before indoors, outdoors, but even throughout the day as your temperature fluctuates, so will your intensity. So, the software is looking at those conditions and then adjusting your intensities to the environment in which you are going to be executing the session, again, so that you are able to execute that session as desired. So, you know, if it's, say, like this morning, it was 60 degrees at my house, whereas it'll be warming into the 80s. If I do a session in the 60s versus the 80s, that's a completely different session. And the intensity I do that session in needs to be adjusted accordingly. So make sure that that is being checked as well.
So before we land the plane on this main set, I want to make sure we spend a little time asking some of the questions specific to the swim, bike, and run sessions that, I see athletes asking. So let's start with the swim. I mean, what tips do you have specific to executing your tried out swim sessions?
Okay, mean coach here, bossy lady. First off, read your swim workouts and do what they say. Often athletes, I find, swim for time, not changing up their pacing. They say, oh my, I got to swim for an hour. I'm swimming for an hour. But it's important to drill when it says drill, kick when it says kick, pull when it says pull, and to focus on nailing that pacing for each set. I admit it is definitely trickier to hit pacing in the water. But after some work and time in the pool, I often find that my athletes start to get a feel for their zones by RPE or rate of perceived exertion. They'll know that zone two is easier swimming. Zone one is drilling. They'll start to know what, you know, pushing zone four feels like. I often say, you're working at about 75% of all out. I also like to give my athletes recovery swims that focus solely on drilling and form. And some of that includes, you know, becoming more streamlined, reducing resistance in the water, better body position, strengthening your pull, perfecting your kick. Those are all things that we work on as far as drilling.
John, one last question about swim sessions that I see people post on the page is people ask about the total duration of the session, because I mean, the runs and bikes are pretty easy. Tridot will tell you to go bike for an hour and it'll include the zones. So folks, they look at, okay, my swim today is supposed to be 1 hour, and they add up the different intervals that they're supposed to hit. And the intervals for that particular session might, in terms of duration with the rests in there, might add up to 105, 104, 103, 58. There sometimes is a couple minute fluctuation. I know just for me, for example, Tridot prescribes 1 hour swims, and usually it takes me an hour and 3 minutes, an hour and 4 minutes in the pool at my paces to do that 1 hour swim. And some people, I mean, for me, I just kind of roll with it. Some people, they look at the math and they're like, wait a second. Talk to us about just the duration of our swims versus the intervals that are contained in that swim.
Yeah. And it's more difficult to prescribe those sessions because everyone's pace is a little different. If you're doing, say, 3 by 8 minutes on the bike session, everyone, 8 minutes is 8 minutes is 8 minutes. if you're prescribing 200s, everyone's 200 is going to be a little bit different. So it's prescribed based on it's a function of like your swim dot score. So your ability, your paces, your threshold, all of that are telling you, all kind of get slotted into certain sessions that are going to be prescribed for you. But even within that, there's still a, variance of those paces and how long a given distance is going to take a given athlete. So, as you mentioned, sometimes your main set is less than the prescribed. Sometimes it can go over a little bit. Really, the case with any session that is prescribed is you complete the time, balance of time at zone two. So if your main set, you do your warm up, get in the main set, and say there's 10 minutes left, just complete out that last 10 minutes at a zone two easy pace. And I always say, just, you know, whatever you're feeling. If you want to do 10 minutes continual at zone two, go for it. If you want to knock that down into 200s, 100s, 50s, 25s, whatever it is, you know, whatever you're feeling, do you need some recovery? Joe will love this. Spend that time doing some drill work. You've done the vast majority of the intent of that session in that main set. So that balance of time is really kind of how can you best maximize that time? It's going to be a little different for everybody. So drilling is great. You know, if you're a long course swimmer, maybe spend that time doing a longer session, like a continual 10 minute swim. But just you complete the time at zone two. Now, if you go over, say it's, you know, you're 60 minutes in and you've got another 200 or 300 yards to go, I would say kind of same thing. It's really going to depend on the specific athlete. If you've been in the water for an hour and you've been following the prescribed session for those first 60 minutes. And, you know, you leave two or 300 off at the end. It's not really going to impact you that much. You've still gotten 60 minutes of high quality swimming in. If you've got a couple minutes, go ahead and knock it out. That'll be good. But, you know, if you need to get out of the pool, if you know, you're either sometimes, you know, especially post COVID, we're still having to make reservations and you've got the lane for a certain period of time and your time is up. No problem. You still got the vast, vast, vast majority of the intent of that session. And so I would say whatever works for you.
One more thing I'll add about the swim, and really this applies to the swim, the bike, and the run workouts. Read the session notes. The session notes can be supremely helpful, whether you're on the app or whether you're online. There's session notes right there in the workout, easy to read. And it just gives you kind of those little execution tips on how to do your workout properly. And something else that is actually really cool about the Mark Allen edition of TriDot, for every workout in the app, there is a video of Mark explaining that workout to you. So that plus the session notes will definitely equip you to have a great workout. Okay, on to the bike. What do you both point out to your athletes about those bike sessions to help equip them to have a great workout?
During the workouts itself, I love for my athletes to focus on single leg drilling or consistent pressure throughout the pedal stroke during warm-up. So that's a great drill to incorporate. Staying in aero, fighting through those intervals. We often talk about how am I going to make it through a 5-minute zone five interval, but taking each one of those 2 minutes at a time, mentally breaking that down into smaller increments is super helpful.
So most bike sessions are pretty straightforward with a warm-up and some intervals thrown in there that there's a certain duration that you're supposed to hit. One that stands out in the catalog is called Big Gear Workout. Tell me, what do athletes need to know about the infamous Big Gear Workout?
Yeah. So just for clarity, the Big Gear Work session is a bike session that is a combination of high intensity. So there's a lot of zone five, which there's zone five is used quite sparingly in those bike session prescriptions. But then there's also time off the bike doing a series of squats, fast squats, isometric holds, kind of everything in between. So you're on the bike, getting a warm up in, you jump off, you do these different squats, and then you jump back on the bike and immediately you're pushing zone five. So you're going really hard. And then it's back off the bike for more squats. So yeah, it's a killer set. And as Joe said, it's going to, you're likely going to feel it, not only the next day or the next couple days, but it's a great set. It's kind of a rite of passage. It's in a really weird and odd way. It's kind of fun. But definitely one that's going to increase the power and you're going to feel those muscles being engaged and strengthened throughout that set.
So Big Gear Workout definitely stands out in the catalog. Just as coaches, are there any other special notes you have about specific bike workouts that our athletes need to be armed with leaving today's episode?
Yeah, I would say there's often a bit of confusion when athletes come on about the 30-30s, 30-90s. Bike workouts. These are some of my favorites. Super short intervals, so we can nail them perfectly. But they have to be distinguished, the two different workouts, because you'll be at a super hard effort for 30 seconds on 30-90s, but you get a full recovery zone one for 90 seconds. And so often athletes then go into 30-30s, which has a lot more intervals. Quite a big number of 30 second intervals there, but you're not recovering fully for 30 seconds during that 30 second recovery. It is back down to only a zone three effort.
Yeah,
that is very tricky, and it ends up being a much more difficult workout. So it's important to read that carefully and see what your recovery zone is there. One is zone one and one is zone three.
Yeah. And it's funny, Joe, when you do that workout with those recoveries in zone three, at first you don't really even notice. By the end of the workout, it's a little challenging to hold that little bit of zone three. Yeah, you definitely feel it by the end of the session. I really like that session. It's a good one. There are a few sessions that I know I get in my calendar where it will prompt you to write at certain cadences. For the most part, it's you kind of have your natural default cadences in the warm-ups. There's some stuff where you're doing high cadence pedaling and spin-ups. John, talk to us about just those couple of sessions where it's prompting us to hold lower cadences in most instances for certain powers and kind of why that is the case.
Yeah, there's a lot of benefits to varying cadence and especially both high and low. There are some different adaptations that happen, as you mentioned, like high cadence pedaling, spin ups, those sort of thing, versus your lower cadence. This is more like a power interval. And so one, this is just it's more of a grind. It's going to engage more of those big muscles. So it's common to see is like a lower heart rate. We see higher power, lower heart rate, simply because we're relying less on the cardiovascular system in this case, and more on the muscular system. So we're utilizing those muscles more, less cardio. But what we're going to see here is those muscles are going to fatigue. So this can really help dial in what is your optimal race day cadence, and especially given your race terrain. So this is something that I found years ago. I had a higher cadence than I do now. And as I was experimenting and training with my cadence, I noticed I was able to have a higher power output at a lower heart rate at a lower cadence. But then there's a point of diminishing return, and then even a negative return when you go too low. If your cadence is too low, you're going to burn up your legs. So it's finding that optimal place in between.
So I do have a couple other follow-up questions about executing your bike sessions, things like power meters versus no power meters, things like executing indoors versus executing outdoors. Folks, we try to keep these episodes to about 60 minutes. It usually goes 64, 65, 66. So I'm gonna move past that. If you're listening to this episode and you're wondering some of the specifics about executing your bike sessions based on the tech that you have, we do have full-length podcast episodes about executing your bike sessions and about executing your swim and your run sessions. So if there's something we don't cover here, by all means, go find a full-length episode hitting each of the disciplines. I'm going to move us on just to the practical side of doing our tried-out training with the run workouts. So when we head off for a run, what do we need to know about executing these sessions?
Okay, mean coach again. Please, please warm up. Please warm up.
Yes.
Please do your
It makes such a difference.
Yes, please do your dynamic stretching and muscle activation exercises. But when I talk about dynamic stretching, you know, when John and I go for a, 14-mile run on a track at 6 o'clock in the morning, we do leg swings, front to back, side to side, you know, calf raises, marching in place. There's a number of things you could do to get warmed up. And I ask my athletes to do about 5 to 10 minutes of drilling. You know, when you look at those run workouts, there are drills prescribed. So 5 to 10 minutes of run drilling on each run session, except for usually those off the bike runs. During the workout, the main set itself, I like to continue the focus on run form and cadence. It sometimes takes your mind off the pain when you're doing intervals to be thinking about proper posture, running tall, slight lean, having those feet land directly under your hips. I talk about a crystal tutu and letting those hands brush against it like an imaginary tutu around your hips. The guys love that reference. But you know, those are all good things to focus on as far as form while you're executing the main set.
Are there any specific run sessions that you find athletes have questions with, or that you find yourself as a coach just giving athletes advice on before they head out the door to conquer that run?
I would say, you know, we all love to talk about the MAV shuttles. And those hard efforts, very important to warm up and do muscle activation before executing a MAV shuttles workout. You're putting a lot of stress on the hamstrings with those surges. So, when you're executing a MAV shuttle, you do need recovery. You need to think about how important the recovery is after that interval, whether that's a jog or going to a walk for you. We want to get recovered and then start the next MAV shuttle. I think there's a lot of misconceptions about the interval runs that we see that are zone 5 efforts. I think people coming on to TriDot think that they need to, do a continuous run after that, but that is a full recovery after the zone 5 effort. So when you see 4 in parentheses, that's bringing it back down to a 4-minute walk and then starting your next zone 5 interval. So it's important to read those specifics for those specific workouts.
Yeah, I think my only other run-focused session question that I want to ask before we move on to my final question is, I often see athletes post about the heart rate zone 2 runs. And John, when people come on, they get prescribed their first zone 2 run, and they find very quickly, sometimes depending on your ability, to keep your heart rate in zone two. Sometimes you're jogging very slowly or even walking. So just to kind of put people at ease that is normal, that is okay. Just very briefly tell us, what is the kind of physiological benefit of keeping the heart rate in zone two, even if that means you're not actually running during that session?
Yeah. So I mentioned it a little bit earlier, but there are certain things that happen only when the body is working in that, what we refer to as a zones two state or an easy state. So even if we are running that easy pace, but the heart rate is increasing and exceeding that zone two heart, we're no longer getting the benefits of that run. So if it's a recovery run, and say your zone two, easy zone two pace is a 10-minute mile, you could run a 10-minute mile, but if you're now 5-10 beats per minute above that zone two heart rate, your body isn't in, it's not going to be recovering from that session. That session is actually going to be causing and inducing additional training stress that is now going to even further demand of recovery that you need. So, same thing with things like we talk about aerobic efficiency, where the heart is building efficiency in increasing the volume that of blood that is circulating. And there's a whole host of things, mitochondrial density. There's a we've talked a lot about this in the past, whole episodes, but there are certain adaptations that only happen in zone two. So it is critical to maintain that easy effort that we refer to as zone two. So, ideally, the time will be spent running. At a certain point when that aerobic efficiency is there and we begin to realize and see some of these benefits of zone two training, it will be much easier to sustain a zone two pace at a zone two heart rate. We'll be able to hold that zone two pace for longer periods of time at the zone two heart rate. And at some point, you may be able even to hold a zone three pace at the zone two heart rate. So then even becoming very, very efficient in that. But so there's a lot of reasons we do it. There are benefits to doing it. But as you said, sometimes this is a slow process. It can take months, sometimes a year or more to really develop. So ideally it's staying ahead of that. So we want to minimize the amount of time that we're walking. We want to maximize the time that we're actually running. So this is a little bit of a learning curve to say, you know, what pace do I need to start at? In order to maintain this heart rate for as long as I can. Ideally, the whole time the session is prescribed. But even if you know at some point it's going to exceed that, maybe it's having every 5 minutes, there's a 30-second walk break. Maybe it's every 10 minutes, there's a 1-minute walk break. Whatever it is for you that you're able to maintain that zone two heart rate for the longest period of time while spending the most time running, that is going to be ideal. And again, that's going to take some time to dial in, a little trial and error, but you'll figure it out sooner than later.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
Listen up, everyone. We are here to talk about Tridot Pool School on the cool down. And with me, I have two graduates of the program who both saw the seconds fly off their 100 meter swim times after attending. So I can't wait to hear about their experiences. Now, if you're a new listener and you want to know what Pool School is, head over to episode 156 to find out all about it. I'm Vanessa, your average triathlete with elite level enthusiasm, talking with Scott Steiner and my Tridot bestie, who also happens to be a Tridot ambassador, Ronnie Andrews. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for the invitation, Vanessa. Looking forward to chatting with you and Scott today.
Hi, Vanessa. Hi, Ronnie. Thank you for inviting me to the show. I'm a huge fan and excited to be here today.
Now, Ronnie, I know that you heard about Pool School because you're an ambassador and a dedicated listener of the podcast. But Scott, can you tell me how you heard about Pool School and what made you decide to register?
Yeah, this one's easy. It was episode 156. Aha. I listened to the podcast on my commute to work and heard that episode the day it came out. I'm lucky I did because it literally sold out in a day or two.
Yeah.
Don't tell Jeff, but at first I was a little skeptical because I thought, well, this just seems like a sales pitch. And I kept listening with an open mind. And as I listened more to Jeff and Coach JoJo describe the process, I started thinking, this concept and this format is exactly what I need. I have tried unsuccessfully to learn to be a better swimmer from online video subscriptions. I have a personal triathlon coach and from swim coaches from like local aquatic centers and fitness clubs. But none of that worked for me. Each of these coaches tried to start with my swim stroke and just fix one thing or have me swim some drills, but not explain why I was swimming that drill or the purpose of it. at this point, I was really stuck in that state of non-improvement and felt like swimming was an absolute waste of my time in my triathlon practice. And I'll give you a reference point. Last year, when I completed my first full distance Ironman, I passed over 1,000 people on the bike course because of how slow I was in the water.
Whoa.
Yes, it was waves and waves of people on the bike.
But so, that must have felt really good to pass all those people.
On the bike course, it does.
Yeah.
But it's terribly deflating to come out of the water and look at your watch and realize how far back and how much of a hole you put yourself in. So not only on the race course, but really in the pool, I felt like practicing was a waste of time. So I would just feel like, why am I even in the water? I don't see any results. I should just quit and go for a run. Aww. Or why am I even here? Why am I working this hard without seeing any results? Because I could really just do a few open water swims leading up to an event and it wouldn't be any different in the results page. Mm-hmm. So what I really needed and what I felt like pool school was going to give me was that full stroke analysis, real time hands-on feedback while I'm in the water. And that's what they promised and that's what they delivered on.
Okay, Ronnie, your turn. What made you want to dive into the sport of triathlon? I just had to throw that in there to make Jeff Rains proud of how punny I am. But anyways, can you tell me about where you started as a swimmer?
Absolutely. So I started about 11 years ago. I was just stopped at a red light going to meet my friend for a run. And I thought, I should do a triathlon. What a great idea. Two problems with that. I didn't own a bike and I don't know how to swim. So it's easy to get a bike and start pedaling, but to swim, not so much. I spent summers at the pool as a kid, but we did flips and diving board and underwater right. swimming. I never swam 25 meters with my face in the water, never mind 500 meters or 750 meters for a sprint triathlon. I knew a guy at a local run club and he raced triathlons. I asked him where I should start. And he pointed me to some locally coached swim groups. I spent the next 10 years with various groups. I read books, watched YouTube videos, and made very minor improvements. I could get through the swim portion of the races with distances ranging from sprints to Ironman, but I didn't enjoy it. And I actually considered switching to duathlons. Then in May of this year, I was at the TriDot Ambassador Camp in St. George. When I happened to have lunch with Donnie Winship, who is now my TriDot coach. We started working together right away, and he had me doing drills for the majority of my workouts instead of countless meters of perfecting my inefficient stroke. My speed was finally starting to pick up, and then I heard about TriDot Pool School on the Facebook group and all the positive feedback and people that I knew that had attended and times that they were dropping off their swims. So I knew that I had to go. So with the combination of Donnie's coaching and what I've learned at pool school, I feel much more confident now and I'm pretty jazzed about 2023 race season coming
Woo-hoo!
Up.
Woohoo! I love that. Yay! It's so nice to hear that you are excited about this race season. Because I know that the swim,
finally.
Right? Like the swim has been a struggle for you. And it's so fabulous to hear that you're excited and you're not switching to duathlons.
It's just defeating when you come out of, especially for a sprint distance, you come out of the swim and you've already lost the race. Like you can't catch anybody. You don't have enough time. So I knew it was time to get that figured out.
So the big question I'm dying to know the answer to is... And I feel like we need a drum roll. How many seconds did you knock off your 100 meter time from the initial assessment on day one to the second assessment on day two?
Yeah, Vanessa, I was 10 seconds faster in the 100 at the conclusion of the
school.
Whoa. And when I say happy, I was really happy with that improvement.
Congratulations. I love that.
I was pretty close. I was 9 seconds off my 100 meter time trial.
That's mind blowing that you knocked off that amount of time in 100 yards. That's not that much of a distance compared to how much time you knocked off. So I am super impressed. Wow. And since you've attended pool school, I'm just curious to know, Have you continued to practice the drills and have you become faster? Because I think it has been a few weeks at least since you both attended pool school, has it?
Yeah, I think it's been about 3 weeks. I got an assessment after pool school from my lane coach, Diego, and he specified the certain drills that were my weakness and what I needed to work on. Mm-hmm. So I don't have to spend 75 minutes a day doing the drills like I did before.
Yeah.
I'm just working on ones that are specific to me. As far as my speed, I'm holding steady around the same pace as what I finished pool school at, but I'm far more efficient. My stroke rate is down.
Oh.
And I'm not as tired after my swim as I used to be.
Yeah, I haven't been able to practice as much as I would like. As I mentioned, it's been a very busy race season right now.
Kidding.
We're kind of in the end of everything we're doing. So I'm actually out there running and I find myself doing Pinocchio drill as I'm running. Don't ask me why, but I'm thinking about how to improve myself while I'm doing other things now. So way different approach. But so when I got home from pool school, a few days later, I swam my favorite open water lake swim. I live on a large lake outside of Atlanta and where I regularly practice. So I went out for a 1 mile swim. And when I completed that swim, I was shocked that I was 3 minutes and 45 seconds faster than my previous
Whoa.
Best. So the 10 seconds in the pool. Yeah, the 10 seconds in the pool was one thing, but almost 4 minutes on a 1 mile swim in open water was huge for me.
That's great.
Like Ronnie, it felt more efficient. And a few days later, I swam at St. George and knocked 3 minutes off my Ironman 70.3 lake swim personal best. So it translated directly over to the results page. And then finally, last week, I don't really have a way to quantify this because I've never swam a 2.4 mm-hmm. mile practice mm-hmm. swim, but I did here and I came out of that feeling great coming out of the water. My hip flexors didn't feel destroyed. I wasn't gasping for air. I wasn't super fatigued. The efficiency of that swim was there and really bumped my confidence heading into Arizona for next week.
Yeah. You know, I think that is more valuable than time is how you feel when you get out of the swim, because ultimately how you feel when you get out of the swim is going to impact the rest of your race. So even if your time was, you know, if the time was the same, the way that you felt is definitely more valuable and important. So good for you. That's great. Now, Scott, what's one memory that you will remember about pool school? It can be anything at all. So let's hear it.
Well, there was a lot of fun, but like, Ronnie said, you're broken up into these small groups and you're sharing this lane with your coaches. And to me, it was just how genuine everyone was. Not just the coaches, but also the participants. You know, everybody there had this shared common goal just to get better or to help you get better. So while you're in those small groups, you could learn from the coaches and get that feedback, but you could also watch your peers executing those drills and visually learn from what they were doing right or not doing right to give you that feedback. And that format was just so fun. It was encouraging, really reinforced what we were learning and just had a great time from the time we started to the time we left.
Well done. I love that. How about you, Ronnie?
Well, ironically, my favorite memory is very similar to Scott's, and it was my lane. I had the great lane coaches, Diego and Tony. And then Donnie came by and Jeff Boer came by to give their feedback. But I was also very lucky that I only had one other athlete in my lane, and his name is Troy. And we worked really great together. It turns out my strengths were his weaknesses and vice versa. So one drill, it didn't matter how it was explained to me, I didn't understand. And Diego just said, watch Troy. And Troy did it. And as soon as I saw him do it, then I got it. So that worked out in my favor. And he was just so positive the entire weekend. And when we went to do our time trial, he was so nervous. He wanted me to go first. So I do my time trial and he couldn't believe how fast I went. He was so excited. And then his turn, he ends up beating me by 1 second. So I'm not sure which one of us was more excited, me or him. And he ended up with a 30 plus second time off his 100 meter time trial.
Are you joking?
So that was really neat to see that. Oh, no, serious.
Wow.
100 yards, sorry, I should say, but it was just exciting to see how excited he was. And he was just, for me, like the best person that I could have been paired with to spend the weekend with. So that's my favorite memory.
Well, that's it for today, folks. Big thanks to TriDot coaches John Mayfield and Joanna Namey for talking to us about TriDot training. Shout out to UCAN and Delta G for partnering with us on the show today. Head to DeltaGKetones.com to fuel your next tough session and race with Delta G Ketones. And head to UCAN.co to feel the steady energy of UCAN. We'll do it all again soon. Until then, happy training.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.